From UFOs to ghosts and government cover-ups, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now, or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Hello everyone, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
And I am Ben.
And that makes this Stuff They Don't Want You to Know.
Yeah, you know, earlier when we had a couple of issues that made us need to restart our recording here, which happens sometimes, and you had a really nice sort of theme songy intro to it, right?
Yeah, I decided not to try it again. The first time it was just out of boldness. I felt like I should just go for it, but it was the wrong decision.
Well, fortune favors the bold, right? So we're doing something a little bit different on today's episode. Isn't that right, Matt?
That's correct. We are looking back through our archives for all the messages that you have sent us, and we're going to go through as many of them as we possibly can and address issues, talk about a couple things, and hopefully it's going to be a good time.
Oh, definitely. We'll also just have some stories that some of you have written to us about, and we wanted to tell these stories to the rest of the audience.
Yeah, some of these are fascinating.
I can't wait
to get into it.
And we'll be looking at stuff across Facebook and some Twitter and some emails. So, Matt, if you don't mind, would you like to do the honors?
All right, we can get this started. This is a message from Chris with a K, and I'm just going to go through it. He says, Matt and Ben, I've had somewhat of an eerie feeling about the capabilities of my cell phone the past several years because of my dystopian view of what others can do with any personal information that can be accessed. When I saw your video on neuromarketing, I had several nuggets of information come flooding into my head to complete a bigger picture. We all know that our cell phones are hotbeds of personal information, and I've just accepted the fact that somebody can get access to anything they want from it. Thank you, Edward Snowden. That's pretty great. And personal person of interest. But what do you guys think about this? Almost all recent smartphones have a rear-facing camera that can see your face as you use your phone. Do you think it's possible for somebody to be able to know what you're doing or looking at on your phone and see your reaction to these things and make an advertisement profile? So this is really interesting, Ben. I just want to point out here that my cell phone that is not in here while we're recording for possible RF interference has tape over the front-facing, or I guess it's the rear-facing camera that looks at me while I'm on my phone.
Yeah, I have the webcam in my laptops taped over too, but not on the phone because, sure, I'll make a stupid face, I imagine, when reading something on Reddit. But if someone catches me doing that, then, you know, they'll probably be disappointed. Or maybe, you know what, maybe I should just start making incredibly exaggerated reactions.
When you look at things that would increase your profile in positive ways for you, like we were saying earlier, when you look at some kind of market research, make these faces that you're genuinely interested.
Oh, yeah.
And when a cat video comes on, just be disgusted. Ugh.
We could become the saboteurs, right?
Okay. So Chris makes a really good point here. Do you think there's any kind of market research that could be done for, with this, with, using technology of, okay, this is what the person's browsing at this time. And here is, here's our facial recognition software running. Do you think there's anything in the future?
Oh, yeah. First, before we answer that, because I do have an answer for that, he's got a couple more questions at the end that I wanted to read. He said, could neuromarketers gather and test this info in order to sell their services to others in the future? Could this info be used for something more sinister? Would that be illegal? It seems like it should be, but does anybody actually read what kind of permissions they allow on their phones and what the end result of granting these permissions could possibly be? So to answer your first question there, Matt, it's completely possible for a phone to be hacked and for the camera abilities of that phone to be exploited without your knowledge, the same way that it's completely possible for a laptop. In some cases, it could be even easier to hack a cell phone in that regard. But what we're talking about and what I think Chris S. here is talking about is not so much hacking as people through negligence allowing a program that's a little bit too nosy onto their phone. So there are two ways this could happen. And one is not entirely your fault as the phone owner, right? Because someone has illegally acquired these capabilities. And the other one is totally your fault, for not reading terms and agreements. And guys,
nobody does it, Ben.
Yeah, no one does it. No one reads all. And there's part of, you know, it's to the advantage of a lot of those companies asking people to agree to something, to have obtuse language that no one wants to read. There was a professor in town a while back who was embarking on a project to make terms and agreement documents more readable.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Just think if it was more like an infographic, or the information was arranged so that you knew in layman's terms what you were allowing company A or app X to do to your information and your phone. Of course, as you can imagine, there wasn't a lot of impetus of, to help him out on the business.
Yeah. End. Nobody's going to give him a lot of money to do this.
So if you agree to this kind of stuff, in your terms and permissions, in your terms and agreements, then it is not necessarily illegal. Could neuromarketers gather and test this sort of info? Chris also mentions, responses to heart rate monitors allegedly embedded in some phones. The truth is that yes, this kind of information could be used. It is possible. Is somebody doing it right now? That we don't know. We do know, however, that there are some ongoing studies that have been conducted regarding biometric signs or biometric data related to advertising.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, well, yeah, that's the whole neuromarketing aspect. Mm-hmm. If you haven't watched it, random plug here. If you haven't watched it, watch our neuromarketing series. It's great.
Yeah. And we'd like to, Chris ends that with, I'd like to hear where you guys take this one. We would like to explore more of this in the future. What I think bowled both of us over, Matt, was the realization of the degree to which this stuff is being pursued.
Oh, yeah. Well, and the dollars that are there for potential companies that would develop this kind of technology, it's just kind of waiting for somebody to reach out and grab. Mm-hmm. So it, in my opinion, if it is not already active and we're just not aware of it, it will be active and we will probably be aware of it very soon.
So, you know, guys, make crazy faces at your phone.
Just
doesn't
do it.
Matter in public by yourself. Tell them that, tell them you're doing it for science.
That's right.
Yeah. That's the newest vague excuse of the age, is people like to say, oh, don't worry. It's for science.
Yeah, with an exclamation mark.
Yeah. Pardon me, officer. That was for science. but speaking of reaching out to grab something, you want to grab us one from Facebook?
Yes. Here's a message from Ian that we got on Facebook. He says, hey, guys, have you heard of this new batch of oddness yet? Search WebDriver Torso for more info. I'd love to see what you guys think. So.
Oh, yeah.
We actually read this and we had heard about it, I think, simultaneously as Ian sent this message, and we actually posted it on Facebook. Mm-hmm. It's a YouTube page that has some curious things going on with it. It's random tones and shapes.
Yeah. Red and blue squares, rectangles. The other thing about this is that this channel posts numerous videos. There's
thousands.
No other way to say it. Yeah. Way too many videos, and people are asking themselves, is this just performance art for the sake of pretentious performance art? We should note also that it seems that this video is acquainted with France, or the video mm-hmm. uploader is acquainted with France, because there is one non-square video, right?
Yes.
One non-tone and shape video where they say, oh, so-and-so is a smart guy.
Yeah.
Right. And the Eiffel Tower's in the background or something.
Yeah.
There's another possibility, which is, of course, much more exciting. And that is the idea that this YouTube channel may be an evolution in the path of number stations.
Sure. That's a fascinating idea. You just need an internet connection or, a connection to some kind of satellite service. And there you go. Now you have all your secret spy information that you needed for that thing you have to do in Helsinki.
Yeah, right. I love that you said that. The thing you have to do in Helsinki. For anyone who doesn't know what a number station is, it's a brilliant example of how older technology can still function perfectly in the modern world. Number stations are these radio transmissions that occur on specific frequencies and every so often sporadically on some of these Russian number stations, somebody with like an accent will come on and say a series of numbers in Russian. Just, you don't know when it's going to happen. I'm sure someone does, but they'll come on and they'll say, you know, 12.
Yeah.
14. 2.
And well, yeah. And there will also be alphabet sequences. So it's just, it's really great. I think it's the Conet Project. Is that correct, Noel? Are you listening to me? No, the Conet Project that actually did all the things with the number stations where it's music with the number stations. Yes, Yankee Hotel Foxtrot. It's great stuff. Thank you, Noel.
That's our producer, Noel, who is not just a great producer, but also a fount of knowledge that we check in with. And sometimes you guys will hear us refer to Noel. I hope you keep this one in. I know that sometimes you cut it out when we talk to you on the show. He's going to. So the interesting thing with those number stations is that while we don't have conclusive proof of what they do, one of the best guesses is that due to the times in which they began transmitting and due to the secrecy surrounding them, it seems fairly safe to say that they are somehow related to espionage. And if you think about it, it's an uncrackable code, because if it is related to espionage, then these sequences of numbers and letters are guides to a cipher, some sort of code book that people are looking at to learn messages or receive information. And if you don't have that book, then there's no way that you could crack this code. The big question then is WebDriver Torso, one of these sorts of endeavors. And if so, this is quite exciting, because YouTube might be one of the perfect places for that.
Or is it just some kind of random generator that's being uploaded on some kind of weird schedule through an algorithm that some person just decided to try out?
Right. Is it just an elaborate art project, which is equally possible, or just a troll, right?
See, or is it, maybe someone's trying to make a music video, but they're doing it very strangely and out of sync. Mm. And then once you put the whole thing together, it's just going to be this beautiful symphonic piece. Maybe that's what it is.
That's a really nice, you know what? I'm going to choose to believe that for a while. At least until the end of this episode. Our next thing comes to us from Zach. And Zach wrote to us on email. Zach, you said, "Hey guys, can't get enough of your show. I did end up looking into jury nullification. Definitely something everyone should be aware of. But anyways, I was thinking Australia often gets left off the radar for most Americans, myself included, until I moved to Tasmania." There's a story
interesting.
There. That's interesting. And Zach goes on to say, "Needless to say, there is a lot the bigwigs here don't like open discussion about. First off, Australia is not actually independent. It's pretty amazing, but the Queen of England can ask Australia to go to war, and we have to go. She appoints a governor general who oversees a lot of what happens down under. It's worth noting that the Crown often doesn't intervene or make orders, but they still have the ability to do so if they choose. Another very dark moment that for a long time was covered up was known as the Stolen Generation. Active between 1909 to 1969, Australian officials would go into Aboriginal communities and take away children to adopt out to white, prosperous families in an attempt to, I'm putting finger quotes in here, civilize them from their perspective. Here's where it gets crazy." Thanks, Zach. 100,000 children may have been taken over the years. I would look at the movie Rabbit Proof Fence, as it details one of the amazing escape stories of some of those children. There are many parallels between what happened to Native Americans and Aboriginals. The thing is that in Australia, this all happened much more recently and was still hidden from the public for a while. Just a pitch, something people don't often hear about. Thanks again for the show."
Wow. That's, what was it? Rabbit proof fence.
Yeah, rabbit proof fence.
Okay, I'm going to write that down and make sure I look that up.
So the stolen generation is something that I had read about, and Zach, you're spot on with identifying the parallels between Native American families and Aboriginal families in Australia, because in the United States, although it's often glossed over in the history books, a very, very similar thing occurred, and people who were often guided by missionary principles would take these quote-unquote heathen children and try to civilize them or teach them some sort of religion thing, often, of course, taking a child from her or his family is way more traumatic than allowing that family unit to continue to exist.
Yeah, not only for the child, but for the rest of the family. God, dude, makes me think about the current Nigerian situation.
Yeah, with Boko Haram.
Yeah, just that idea of taking children, it's one of the most horrendous acts that you can think of.
Well, and it happens with a appalling regularity. One interesting and extremely depressing statistic is that in raw numbers, there are more slaves alive today than there have been at any point in human history. And again, that's raw numbers, so that statistic can be a little misleading because there are also way more people around than there have been in the past.
Yeah, but it shows you that the ways of humanity haven't changed that much, unfortunately.
That's true. That's true. We can't leave just that horrible statistic standing. It is also true that this is, believe it or not, one of the most peaceful times in human history, which is not saying that this is a great time, just saying that other times were bananas in the worst possible way. One last point there, with the effect of this stolen generation activity by the Australian government, it's this. The effects of those sorts of practices, regardless, you know, maybe they were well-intentioned. And most people don't think of themselves as villains, so maybe the people stealing these children thought they were doing a good thing. But regardless of their intention, the truth is that this has had long-lasting intergenerational effects, not just upon Aboriginal communities in Australia, but also upon Australian culture as a whole. And there's no easy fix for this, but I think one of the first steps is making this a well-known story. So thank you for bringing this to light, and we hope that our other listeners, guys, I guess everybody but Zach, if you haven't seen Rabbit Proof Fence, do check it out. And
hopefully we can cover this.
Yeah,
I'm interested.
Yeah, we'll definitely cover this one. And as always, when you start digging a little bit beneath or between the lines of history textbooks, you find a frightening number of skeletons.
Yeah, just depending on where you live, there will be nice little redacted marks all over one specific area. Okay, so let's bring it back to Facebook really fast, Ben. Oh, wait, but before I do that, I just want to give a shout-out to Heather, who's written us numerous very kind things.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I really didn't – I don't want to read – Ben and I both decided we don't really want to read the email – one of the main ones that you sent us, just because it's very nice and it's awesome. Thank you for sending it. But I don't think anybody wants to hear us just get complimented by ourselves, by you through ourselves.
Well, Matt, it wasn't all just compliments, because Heather also had some great suggestions that if we haven't mentioned on the air yet, I might just be saving those so that we can do a series on them. But Heather, if you are listening, thank you for checking in with us. We are responding to your email.
I'd just like to say, Heather, I hope, obviously you're not right now at this moment enjoying listening to Ben's voice, but just that whole time earlier when you were listening to Ben's voice, I hope you enjoyed that.
Oh, come on, man.
She says, no. I have to read it, Ben. I have to read it. Just one tiny little excerpt. Heather says, Ben, you have one of the sexiest non-British accented voices I've ever heard. Have you ever considered doing audiobooks? Have you?
Are you asking me?
Yeah, yeah. Have you?
You know what? Maybe you and I can do an audiobook one day, Matt.
Well, maybe. I don't know if you need me, because she says she would pay real, actual dollars to get audio of you reading public domain works.
Well, that's so kind. I would recommend, you know, that How Stuff Works does have a couple of audiobooks by our buddies Josh and Chuck.
Yes, they're great. Highly produced. You'll love it. It feels kind of like Radiolab to me.
Yeah, their Guide to Happiness is great. That's one of my favorites. Which reminds me of this, Lizzie writes to us and says, "Hi guys, nice work on shining light on stuff they don't want us to know. Just wondering, how was it fair to bring up what you claim to be an amazing, impressive ghost story and then deciding not to tell us anything about it? Can I please, please, please get a copy of this story? You know the one I'm talking about. You said it was too long to read on air." And then she said, "So apparently WikiLeaks released cables about aliens. It's trending right now. I'd be down to hear more about aliens." So would we, of course. And this is a note that made me think of this here. She said, "You guys rock. I love that you occasionally mention Josh and Chuck from Stuff You Should Know, because I get happy thinking about you all being friends and hanging out."
Aww.
We do actually hang out.
Yeah.
We sit around in the same office, and some of the big news today, just for a peek behind the scenes, is that Chuck recently got a skateboard.
Oh man,
he
got another skateboard since the ones that he had when he was younger, I guess.
Yeah. He had been skating for a while as a teenager,
yeah.
And now he's back on the board.
No way.
Yeah, he assures me it's not like getting back on a bicycle.
I'm sure.
Okay, so about this ghost story, Lizzie, I actually went back and looked for the copy of the ghost story,
mm-hmm.
But if I can find it, because it was long and it was pretty cool. If I can find it, then I am going to send it to you post-haste. But
you know, I do have a copy of that.
You do have a copy?
Yes. I think we should. I still want to do a special audio podcast where we just read that story.
Okay. Oh, man. That sounds like a great idea.
I forget the name of the person who sent it in, but I hope they wouldn't mind. We'll shoot them an email and see.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so what's next, Matt? Where do you
want
to go?
Oh, yeah. Let's go back to Facebook. I was going to do that earlier. Sorry. This is a really fast one. This is from Carlos, and I'm not going to use your last name, Carlos, but I will say that you are the lunatic with an A on the. He asks, "What movie software do y'all use for your videos? Please get back at me." Well, Carlos, just to address that quickly, we use an old version of Final Cut, Final Cut 7, that's no longer supported. And that's just because we developed the show around that format. And it's just, honestly, we haven't had time to switch anything over to 10 or to switch it over to Premiere or any of the other things. We're going to be doing that in the future, but that's still what we use. We use a bunch of Photoshop and After Effects, mm-hmm. Motion.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the main ones. MPEG Stream Clip is one we use. And that's about it.
And also, for those who are not acquainted with this, and we'll be preaching to the choir for Final Cut fans, the Final Cut version we're using is superior to Final Cut 10.
Oh, so, well, okay. You might get some flack about that. I think it is.
Okay.
And that's only because I've been using Final Cut that has at least been close to that version for a long time.
For what you want to do,
yes.
It's superior.
Yes, agreed.
That's fair.
Agreed,
okay.
That is fair.
Yeah, so if somebody else thinks it's perfect for something else, then they're doing something different.
That's right.
All right, so we have another letter from our listener, Drew V. Drew, you said, "Hey there, been a fan for quite some time, just finished up Are You Part Neanderthal?" Our newest episode, he said, "Early human history has always been something that fascinated me greatly, so I'm glad to see some work by you on the topic. Second, you mentioned at the very, very end of the episode that if anyone wanted a shout out to drop you an email, so this is me doing that." Oh, and you put his whole name in here, so I'll go ahead and say it. "My name is Drew Volker. Would be quite awesome to hear somebody from the crew say it out loud on an episode."
Drew Volker.
Drew Volker.
Oh, man, so many times.
Yeah. Thanks for your time. I appreciate it. You know what? We appreciate your time, Drew. We're a free show. All of our, except for our mysterious sponsor, all of our best ideas come from listeners, and we have had numerous listeners write into us before about, especially when news about the real life hobbits and Denisovans
yeah.
came out. Most of our great ideas come from listeners. So thank you guys.
Thank you, Drew. Here's another one from Facebook, Ben. This is from Anthony. He says, hey, I really enjoy your show. I was wondering if you guys could make an episode on AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, and 12-step programs, this one in particular being a cult. And he says, I mean, the first step is to accept that you are powerless. So right away, they're breaking the person down as they would in a cult. What do you guys think?
You know what? This is a very interesting point that you're raising because, and thank you for raising it, because case by case, an AA meeting from, cause I looked into some of this, like, is AA a cult, right? And case by case, it appears that some groups take on cultish characteristics. From what I understand, these are in no way representative of the entirety of AA. It's just because it's built as sort of a decentralized organization, it's easy for people to drift away under a charismatic leader.
Sure.
And, you know, isolation, a charismatic leader, an abiding problem, and only one way to get saved through a certain pre-described path, does sound a lot like a cult.
I'm just gonna
be honest. Yeah, it's culty. It's a bit culty. Another thing that's interesting that this makes me think of is, what is it? Narcotic Users Anonymous, NA.
Yeah.
Because that has been, linked with, Scientology, which it's caused a lot of criticism for people who also disagree with Scientology and say that this is not actually helping drug addicts. It's trying to convert them.
Yeah, man, that's fascinating, dude. Scientology. I know they're very anti-drugs in Scientology.
Right, yeah, as well as psychiatry.
Yeah.
I believe. The thing that we do have to say is that methods of breaking addiction are not always going to be the same for all people or for all types of addictions, you know, and, it is quite possible that there are isolated groups that have taken on cult characteristics. It's an interesting question to dig into. And if we find enough to make an episode about something like that, then we'd be glad to because, you know, you and I have found, things that turn out to be cults under the strangest front, like pet rescue places out in the middle of the desert somewhere.
Yeah, or at least morphed into pet rescue places.
Okay, all right. Matt, you and I are always going to be, we're going to be talking about 4PI for such a long time.
Dude, we can't talk about 4PI. That's one of the rules.
Oh, that's right. It's the first rule of 4PI. okay, so we have another email here from Eunice O. And Eunice says, hi, I'm an avid follower of your show. Could I get a shout out for all your British viewers, please? Okay, so I'm going to tackle your full name here, Eunice, and I hope I don't mess it up. Eunice Olayemere, O-L-A-Y-E-M-E-R-E. So I am probably butchering that, but thank you so much for writing to us, Eunice. Eunice says, I found your episode, Are You Part Neanderthal? Fascinating. I am from Nigeria and therefore probably not genetically related to Neanderthal, but why? Did Neanderthals not go west like Homo sapiens? And you know how it's been hammered into our generation's heads growing up that we are all the same. By implication, does that mean we are not? And in parentheses, slippery slope. Maybe we are all a mishmash of different types of early humans. Warm regards, massive respect for the show. These are some fantastic questions. What we're learning, and we as a species, as we're delving into the murky origins of the early stages of humanity, that moment where we start to become what would be the modern human, what we are finding is that it is quite possible that entire regions of the world have a genetic lineage descended from other versions of early man. And currently there's ongoing debate about how similar to or different from modern Homo sapiens, the Neanderthals or the Denisovans, or the real life hobbits actually were.
I think it's fascinating, Ben, that the further we get away from the time, you know, that we were separate versions of humanity, only the further and further we get will we learn more and more about the past? I think that's very interesting if you look at it from a fourth dimensional perspective, that's this loop that has to be created almost. I know this sounds a little weird and trippy. I'm not high, Ben, or listeners.
Right.
But no, I think that's very interesting. Just sometimes the further you get from something, the more you're going to learn about it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because let's not forget that in the course of doing this show for as long as we've done it, we have found things, historical things that clearly were a conspiracy, not a theory, mm-hmm. you know, not circumstantial evidence. We know who did what and when. And it was all hush hush for, you know, decades or even centuries. And then when it came out, usually after everyone had passed away, then it was an obscure, who'd have thunk it type of historical thing. But it is true that, you know, that's one of the reasons, especially when you and I first started, that we stuck with older instances of conspiracies.
Yeah. Right? 'Cause there's a wider view. And speaking of that, here is a message from JM. Jay says, "Hey guys, I love the show. As a Teamster, I think it'd be great to see an episode on Jimmy Hoffa.
Ooh.
I love him or hate him. What happened to Hoffa is definitely something they don't want us to know. Best wishes." That's awesome.
That's awesome. Hoffa episode for sure. I'm going to write that down.
Yeah, that's one of those topics that should have been covered by us already. And we keep finding those that there are topics that we just haven't done yet that are just kind of staring at us in the face, but we can't see them because we're just looking at something else. Isn't that how it always happens, Ben?
That's how it happens so far, at least. I'm not going to give up yet. All right. We've got another email here from Jack U. "Hi, guys. I'm Jack from Southwest Tasmania, Australia. Huge fan of your channel podcast. You handle even the most out there conspiracies with respect, which I think is awesome. So keep up the good work." Hey, Jack, thank you. We really appreciate that. So Jack says, "We have a few conspiracies here, which you may want to look into, one being the disappearance in 1967 of our 17th Prime Minister, Harold Holt. The official story is that he drowned while swimming in the ocean, but for almost 40 years, there's been conjecture over what really happened. One theory is that he was killed by the CIA. Another theory was that he was gathering intelligence for the Chinese, and a small submarine picked him up off the coast for resettlement. It sounds crazy, but some intelligence people actually give some weight to some of these theories. Another strange conspiracy is from my home state, the sightings of the extinct thylacine, or Tasmanian tiger, as he's known across the water. This subject divides the island state like none other. A lot of the old-timers tell of bands of tigers in the hills, which are always one step ahead of the humans. Keep up the cool work, Jack."
Nice.
Yeah, it's interesting because we know sometimes that animals that were suspected of being extinct have been rediscovered. As for something the size of a Tasmanian tiger, that is very, very interesting because, you know, when we did cryptozoology, we learned about how much space large animals need just for survival's sake.
Yeah, and how improbable some of those statistics at least make it seem. Some of the cryptozoological creatures, unfortunately, because I want to believe, Ben. But I want to learn more about Harold Holt. That's fascinating as well.
Mm-hmm. One other thing. Oh, man, he would kill me if I forgot this. Jack said, "I would love a shout out to my partner in crime, Andrew, a.k.a. Deep Throat."
Interesting.
I don't think it's the Watergate guy.
Oh, it's a different Deep Throat.
It might be a different one. One other short one here before we go back to Facebook. Brandon M. wrote to us and said, "I would like to see an episode about hidden African archaeology suppression or white supremacy," which we have touched on.
A bit, yeah.
We've touched on a bit of it when we did some ancient alien architecture topics and some lost cities, I think we refer to it. But I would always love to do more of that because as we're finding the newest satellite technology, or at least the newest publicly acknowledged satellite mm-hmm. technology is showing us amazing stuff about the ancient world. I mean, we are finding so many ruins nowadays just with LIDAR, which is actually...
LIDAR is one of the coolest things yeah. that exists right now. Mm-hmm. Another really short one from Daniel. Daniel, you have one of the coolest last names. I wish I could say it, but I'm going to not say it. You said, I think you should do an episode on chemtrails and contrails. I think it'd make a very interesting video and lots of people would enjoy it. Well, guess what? Daniel, you're in luck because we already have an episode on that and you can find it on our channel. Just search chemtrails and maybe stuff don't. Maybe that's a good way. Not sure.
Yeah, it can be tricky to find some of those older ones. And you know what, Matt? I would love another crack at that topic because that was back in our early days.
Fledgling,
you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't mind doing that. All right, I'm going to jump back over to Facebook one more time really fast. This is from Bing. Thank you for writing, Bing. Bing says, would you investigate more about the possible chance that Hitler survived World War II? And then Bing gave us a link to this new information released by the FBI in regards to his possible hiding location in Argentina.
Mm-hmm.
So we've talked a little bit about the subject, but we right. haven't really focused on Hitler.
That's true, because there's so many strange conspiracies. And notice I say conspiracies, not theories.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many strange things about the Nazi Party and World War II that later turned out to be completely true, that we've been always careful to before we delve into those because we don't want to run out of the frankly the kind of easy topics.
Yeah.
But we have never done a Hitler episode at all. And I think especially given the recent revelations about the skull and what may or may not have happened to Hitler's body, I think it bears investigation. Now for the record, the majority of scholars who study this sort of stuff dismiss the idea of Hitler's survival as a conspiracy theory. But even if he just died in a different way, it would still be revelatory news.
And at least there's fascinating information about the rat lines and Argentina.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Of which is real.
Yeah. So it's at least couched in enough. Here are the facts. That the here's where it gets crazy part would be great. So guess what? I think we're going to have to do that.
Yeah, we're definitely going to have to do that. Let's also go ahead and thank Nick in advance. Nick wrote to us and said, Nick said, hi, guys. Dear Matt and Ben, I've been enjoying your video podcast. I like the longer format on the podcast. I have a couple of show ideas for you. And he gave us one of the greatest ones. As we said earlier, a lot of our great ideas come from our listeners, come from you guys. And Nick said, do the octopus.
Yep. And that's how I had heard about it before. But this is the reason that I delved into it. Much deeper than I had ever before.
So if you enjoy our series on the octopus, which includes both audio and video podcasts, then you have Nick to thank, and we have to thank Nick too. So he recommended another thing that I think might interest some listeners, and that is the Gemstone File. Let's just read a quick bit of this.
Okay.
The Gemstone File is a document, says Nick, created over several years by a man named Bruce Roberts. The file first began circulating around 1969. Because this file is over 1,000 pages, a skeleton key to the Gemstone File was released in 1975 by Stephanie Caruana. The file centers around Aristotle Onassis. Onassis is said to have kidnapped Howard Hughes, gotten Kennedy elected, and later had Kennedy killed, among many other things. The file and key begin in the 30s with Onassis and Joseph Kennedy striking a bootlegging deal. The key runs all the way to 1975 when it was released.
Fascinating.
Yeah, and he says that both the octopus and the gemstone file are examples of mega conspiracies, an overarching conspiracy incorporating several smaller theories. And, you know, as another example, he points to the Illuminati. You know, Nick, thank you for these fantastic suggestions. I'd love to cover the gemstone file as well, assuming, of course, that you and I don't disappear after the octopus stuff, right?
Stop it, man. don't say that.
Are you feeling paranoid, Matt?
Yeah, I always feel paranoid, but when we cover something like the octopus that just feels it, it feels so real. Mm. And, you know, people died, whether or not it actually had anything to do with the conspiracy, maybe, maybe not, but people died. Numerous people died around the octopus.
Well, that is, it is true that numerous people have died. I don't know if it's all related though. I'm a little bit more skeptical on that one.
No, certainly. I as well reserve some of my skepticism.
However, Danny Casolaro's death is something's rotten in Denmark there. Okay, well, we are going to wrap up this episode of Listener Mail. Thanks to Ian, Nick, Eunice, Jack, Drew, Heather, Brian, Brandon, Daniel, Carlos, Jay, Zach, and Bing for writing to us, to everyone who has written to us that hasn't made it on the air yet. We would love to bring your stories to the rest of the audience as soon as we can in an upcoming episode because, again, not only do all of our best ideas come from you guys, but also some of the most important stuff that you will hear on this show comes from listeners just like you.
Well, yeah, and it also brings a little bright to our day when we're stuck in a cave reading about some horrible thing that happened in history. You know, getting a message from one of you is, it's a huge positive part of my day, at least.
Mm-hmm. Speak for yourself. No, I'm kidding. I love it.
And speaking of, because we love interacting with you guys. So in that light, I'm going to read one last thing from someone named Chris who wrote to us on Facebook, Ben. And he says, "Hey, Ben and Matt, I was just wondering if you guys are ever thinking about doing a meetup at all in or around Atlanta." He's just wondering.
Hmm.
What do you think?
Hmm. It's a trap. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
I want to do this.
If people are interested, we would love to do that. We have talked about doing a live Google Hangout again. That was pretty cool. It was nice to put the faces with the names of listeners. And we found some great topics that we later made into some kick-ass episodes.
Yeah.
But, you know, let us know, you guys. Write to us, as Matt said, on Facebook and Twitter. Visit our website, www.stuffthedontwantyoutoknow.com. That's right, the longest URL in the business. And if you want to be on the air in a later episode of Listener Mail, go ahead and send us an email. Our address is
conspiracy@discovery.com.
For more on this topic and other unexplained phenomena, visit testtube.com/conspiracy stuff. You can also get in touch on Twitter at the handle @conspiracystuff.